Dear Heavenly Father, thank you again for this new day. Thank you for each of these people who are here to learn. And Lord, we pray that the information we share will be encouraging and inspiring, and that you will send your Spirit to convict and guide and direct these individuals into your plan for them. And we thank you for doing this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Just want to say, last year the Pearlies shared in our seminar too. And I'm looking forward to seeing what difference has happened on their farm in a year. The other thing that I want to say is that, you know, it's not all bad to be without your notes. You know, you just have to lean on the Lord that you'll remember, and he'll, you know, so I may say things that I didn't plan to say. So God is good. Despite technological foibles. All right, so I'm going to give very much in brief just a little bit of our family's history. John and I spent 6 years in Kenya, where we taught missionaries' children at Maxwell Adventist Academy. And from there, how we got to farming is amazing. I don't know how God did it, but he did. And we just finished our full testimony, and you can buy the book at our booth, where we really share all that God took us through and brought us to where we are today. So this is when we moved to the farm. John's parents, in their retirement, bought 190 acres, and we thought they were crazy. We were in Africa. The family was spread everywhere. We thought, what are they doing? But God knew, and he planned it. And we moved there in the spring of 1995. And in the fall of 1998, we launched Bountiful Blessings Farm. And we started as a strawberry production. We somehow had the idea. This just tells how green we were. We had the idea that we would earn our whole living from one crop in the spring, being strawberries. It worked perfectly on paper, but it was quite a disaster. We planted 18,000 plants that year. We got them from the tip stage, so we propagated them, and then we planted them out in the field. And this is our work crew. John and I, Kirsten was 6, Jonathan was 5, and Joshua was 2.5. And it's not that we didn't have any other help, but we did the bulk of everything. It took us a full week to plant. So that was where we began. So that's just another view of that field. It was 30 rows that were 300 feet long. And if we could zoom up there, you would see those three little dots are Kirsten and Jonathan and myself. And I'll tell you, it was totally overwhelming for this. I wouldn't call myself a city girl, but I had no experience with this kind of gardening. I mean, I had been a gardener. I grew up gardening with my parents, but this was just totally beyond what we had ever dreamed. So I would say this about our beginning. It was two things. It was extremely hard, and it was extremely humble. We just started with nothing, just nothing, and except the land. My father-in-law had a tractor, and God ordained that a family member gave us a few implements for our tractor. And that's kind of where we started. And I won't tell you the 10 years that followed this year were full of mountaintops and very deep valleys. But we wouldn't trade them for anything. It was the richest experience for our family to go through. So this is our family today, and I'd like to introduce them if they're here. Why don't you boys just come up, because you're gonna be on next anyway. Is Caleb here? Sure he is. So I can introduce them from the picture if I live in a house full of men, and I love it. So these are our men. Of course, you met John. This is our oldest, Jonathan. Yes, I've got one more man, my fifth son. And I have one that's not with us today. So Jonathan, you'll hear more from those of you who stopped by his greenhouse. He is the owner and operator of Farmer's Friend, which is developing and manufacturing small tools for farmers. And so we are so pleased to have him on the corner of the farm. And next, I'll just introduce you this time. You can introduce it. This is Joshua. He's the main farmer in the bunch. He is farming our winter seasons. And John and I mainly handle the summer. But he is doing the winter growing with the apprentices. He helps us in the summer, too. We couldn't do it without him. Next is Zach. And he is in the picture there, the blonde one between Joshua and behind Kirsten. Zach is at Kibidula Farms in Tanzania right now, serving for 5 months. He's working on the avocado plantation and doing whatever is needed to be done. Next is Caleb. Caleb is 13. He's our woodworker. You can stop by our booth and you can see the handcrafted things that the whistling woodworker does. And last but not least is our only girl, Kirsten, and we married her off to a fine young man, Nick Connect, almost 2 years ago, coming up on 2 years. And they are involved. They help us with the marketing end. Kirsten mainly manages our social media with Nick's help. And then they do, when they are on the farm, they help with one of our farmers markets. And so that is our current team. Thank you so much. I'll just sit here. So let me show you that. Hey, guys, Joshua, you might as well stay up here because you're on next with Dad and Jonathan. All right. So this is the farm today. And it's we live in the Red Barn, in a small part of the Red Barn. And we have grown from being a one-crop farm to running a CSA, which you'll hear more about, the CSA, 10 months of the year. So we start the CSA the first week of April, and we run it. And next week, the first week of February, Joshua will end the winter CSA, although he might still have some things to sell through the month of February. We do farmers markets. We have a small online market. We sell to some restaurants, and we sell to some stores. So it's just we don't do anything in a grand way. Like, our CSA is 80 members. We'd like to get it up to 100. But I mean, there are CSAs that have hundreds. So we aim to keep it small, and we'll talk a lot more about the CSA. That's the heart of what we do. So that's a little bit of where we are at. I'll just tell you about our structures. We have 4 movable hoop houses, which you see here. The one very closest to the barn is our seed house. It's the only heated structure that we have. And then there are 4 movable hoop houses that we have 3 positions that we can move them into. And then beyond, then there are 10 small pads. And I'm sure John will talk about this more, but we've gone to smaller plots as compared to, we used to have 1.5 acres of just a huge 1.5 acres. We've cut it down into small plots, which has just helped us in many ways. And then beyond those 10 plots, we have 3 30 by 100 foot hoop houses that are stationary structures. So that's a little bit of our farm. And I just want to say that, you know, as we present today, we just pray that everything that we share and everything that we do will be for God's glory. And that's what we want our farm to be. We want it to be a testimony to His faithfulness and His goodness. And so as we share today, I hope that that will be foremost, that we want God to be glorified.
Okay, question about question and answers. We are the last session. We hope there'll be time for question and answers, and then we will probably have time for just a few in between. You had a question on something that has already been shared. We can take one quick. Okay. And I'm going to just repeat the questions for audio verses sake. But the question is about movable hoop houses. She hadn't heard about that. I would just tell you, Elliot Coleman is the one who kind of pioneered the movable hoop houses. And there are certain advantages to them. There are disadvantages too. So we actually have 4 movable and 4 stationary right now. Just quickly, I would say the main advantage for movable is you're able to use your space more efficiently. And that is a nice advantage. You can have warm weather crops into November and then have your cool weather stuff planted outside and then move it over that and then do the reverse in the spring, which is very nice. And then the other main thing for movable hoop houses is it's theoretically will keep the soil healthier because an enclosed environment is unnatural. And so you can have pests and diseases build up inside, although a lot of that depends on how you manage it. Nick, are we ready to switch over? Okay, so I will just say at this point that we are a little conflicted in sharing about market gardening because, as my wife shared, you know, we kind of started out doing everything wrong, and we want to help you avoid the mistakes we made, but at the same time, that was such a rich time for us spiritually, and we grew so much in our faith in the Lord that we hate to think of people not going through hard times because it drew us so close to the Lord. But I think the reality is you're probably, even with all the resources we're going to be sharing today, you're probably still going to have some struggles. And so we trust that the Lord will teach you what He wants you to learn through that as well. So, you know, we're going to be focusing some on business. And right now with this travelogue, we're going to talk quite a bit about money. And again, I am a little conflicted on that because I don't think that giving you dollar amounts is the best way to measure success. I think there's a lot more to it than that. So I just want you to keep that in mind as I throw out numbers of these farms we visited. We're not suggesting that should be your goal to make that kind of money. I don't think you need to make that kind of money. But again, I'm trying to shatter this myth that I still hear a lot of Adventists saying, oh yeah, that'd be nice, but you know, you can't make a living doing that. That's just not true. You can. And we're not the best example. You know, we're still, because we're trying to focus on ministry, we feel that God called us to ministry and not to business. He was pretty clear with us that he told us, you know, you focus on serving and I'll make sure the finances are taken care of. So that's really been our focus. We're not business people, but the Lord has blessed. And I will just tell you that currently we're grossing between $130,000 and $140,000 a year. And again, that's gross. Most small farms are netting 40% to 50% of gross. And, you know, and we're we're trying to pay our kids, and so, you know, the money goes. But anyway, that gives you a little idea, and then we'll talk about some of these other farms. And this is going to be kind of a whirlwind tour. I think I'm going to move over here. We visited, in a week, we visited, I think it was 8 different farms. And this was our first stop, Dan and Allie Haney, Shenandoah Seasonal, up in the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. They've only been doing it for, I think this was their 3rd year. My boys, I was hoping, oh, they're back there. Okay. Do you remember how many years? I think it was 3. They're going to have to be otherwise occupied, and we didn't get this organized well enough for them to be sharing like I had wanted them to. But anyway, the main thing that I got from this farm was just go for it. You know, they had a lot of strikes against them. They were leasing land. It was not very good land. They had to actually truck in their water in big tanks, and they were using drip lines from the tanks. So they had 3 small hoop houses, and we delivered them a couple of Jonathan's Caterpillar tunnels. So again, and they did quite a bit with chickens. And one neat thing, if you're interested at all in chickens, that we learned from them, they buy, what do you call them, pullets in the spring that were ready to lay. I think they pay $10 a piece, and then they keep them all summer and then sell them in the fall for $5. And so, you know, they're not having to take care of them through the winter, which is really nice. And, you know, you can make a lot more than $5 on eggs through the summer. Eggs, you know, of course, some people may not be comfortable with that, and we've kind of gone back and forth with it, but I guess we're to the place where we say, you know, if people are going to eat eggs, we'd rather them eat really healthy eggs, you know, free range. And so my son Joshua does do some eggs, some poultry. So this is just a picture of some of their fields, their beds. So again, it was more going there just taught me that, you know, if you just go for it, you can. They were making between 100 and 120,000 a year on, you know, this was 3 years in, and this was on the land was quite sloped, and like I say, just a lot of strikes against them. But it just was reinforcing to me that, you know, a lot of it is just gumption and just doing it. So next, from there, we kind of, this was a little bit off the beaten track, but we went to Brooklyn Grange. And probably many of you have seen pictures of you know, downtown New York with these gardens on the roof of these buildings. They actually have over 2 acres of gardens on 2 different rooftops. And they're making about $6 a square foot on these rooftops. So 2 acres is, you know, 80,000 square feet approximately. Very interesting. You know, of course, it wasn't our idea of gardening, but we enjoyed going there. They do a lot with microgreens. That's something we saw over and over at these farms. A lot of microgreens going on. There's good money to be made there. More microgreens. This was the view from their garden looking down. But it was really neat to see this piece of green in the city. You know, that's looking over to Manhattan, and it's quite a view of a city. But to just see this little bit of green space there was really fun. And there were chefs coming up the elevator while we were there, you know, from local restaurants coming up to see, hey, what do you got this week? You know, we want to do a special on this. And so again, we're not advocating urban gardening, but I think there's a place for it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on. This was their washing area. And they would wash it and then put it in the tub there to mix it. You see the washing machine there. That's something I think every farm we went to has a modified washing machine for spinning your salad greens. It's the best thing out there right now, although Jonathan's working on trying to develop a dedicated commercial. But you just take a washing machine and just rip out the electronics and do a simple on-off switch to the spin cycle. And we've done it, and it's great. Here's Ben Flanner, who's the main guy in charge of Brooklyn Grange, and one of his farmers. Now, from there, you know, we spent, I don't know, 3 hours in the city, and that was about 3 hours too much. We headed out of New York and went upstate. This is actually in the Catskill Mountains of New York. This farm blew us away. This is called Neversink Farm. Neversink, it's kind of a neat name for a farm, but the reason it's named that is because it's on the Neversink River and near the town of Neversink. So that's where they got the name. But this guy, Connor Crickmore, here he is looking at Jonathan's harvester. One thing I'll say about him that's really impressive to me, he is willing to invest in anything that he thinks is going to make his farm more profitable. So he invests the money, and if he likes it, he keeps it. If he doesn't, he tosses it. You know, he is really into, what is going to make my farm more efficient? And a good illustration of this is that he bought two of the first 10 harvesters that Jonathan sold. For those of you who don't know, that green thing is called the Quick Cut Greens Harvester. It's my son manufactures those, and it's actually revolutionizing small farms. But anyway, he bought two of the very first ones that were ever made, and he's been using them ever since. And then he bought a new one from us here just to have the latest model. But Connor Crickmore is earning over $400,000 on an acre and a half. And he believes he can get it up to $500,000. This is with no tractor. He doesn't even own a tractor. And he has a BCS, but he doesn't use it. So it's all hand tools, an acre and a half. And it's unbelievable. It's the most perfect farm we've ever been to. You had to look really, really hard to find weeds. He's got two movable hoop houses. You can see the track there. I probably went too fast. It's just immaculate. You won't find a rock or a weed. Well, you have to look really hard to find a weed in his farm. Here he is discussing some of his tools. I've got a short video clip of this thing in front here, this orange thing, is a paper pot transplanter. Have any of you seen or heard of those? That is really revolutionizing a lot of small farms. He's using it quite a bit. it's kind of expensive. It's actually ridiculously expensive. That flimsy little thing there costs like over $1,000. And then you have to buy these special paper pots. But this is stuff I'm trying to remember. Do you remember what that was, boys? How many people does he have working? When we were there, he only had two helping him. But I think maybe in the busiest season, he may have four besides his wife. He's got twins that are like 3 or 4 years old, so his wife's kind of otherwise occupied. But this guy came straight out of the city 6 years ago. And in 6 years, he was like a computer programmer, although other places I've read something about chef, but anyway, what he told us, he was in computer programming. So in 6 years, he's taken raw land and made this incredibly productive farm. Okay, here's the video. Now, how am I going to do that? Can you press the button for the video? This is how a paper pot transplanter works. So you just pull it along like that, and you can imagine, that's his little daughter there, but you can transplant hundreds of transplants per minute by yourself. So if you think about, even if you're fast transplanting by hand, you know, this can really, really speed things up. It's called a paper pot transplanter. They came out of Japan. Johnny sells them now. We're going to talk more about resources later on, because I feel like the best thing I can do for you all is point you in the right direction of resources. Okay, there we go. This is a little 12-inch wide flame weeder that he manufactured, kind of modified, and he does his aisles with that, which is kind of neat. He's quite an innovator. Uh-oh, what's going on? Oh, no. Ah, somebody help me. Stop it. Sorry, this is really awkward. Those are some amazing Brussels sprouts right there. Can you go back? We kind of went through a lot of pictures there. Yeah, just keep going back. This is all Elliot Coleman's farm. Keep going. Oh, wait. No, we're going the wrong way here. This is going forward. Well, there's the slideshow. You just saw it, so. Yeah, no, sorry about that. I didn't see we were going the wrong way until. Can you just. Yeah, I have a very strained relationship with technology. So anyway, what else can I tell you about Connor Crickmore? This is another great example to me of his farm. He had a bunch of raspberries in full bearing. You know, this was the end of September. And they were, they were well loaded. He said, we're not even picking them. Can't make enough money on them. And I'm thinking, man, raspberries, you know, this is great. But he doesn't sell anything that can't make him at least $100 an hour in harvest and washing, you know, well, they call it pick, pack, and wash, but it's really pick, wash, and pack. So that's the way he kind of judges things. If he can't make $100 an hour doing that part, then he just abandons the crop. He's just super, okay, let's see if this is going to work now. To all combined. So, you know, so for example, radishes, you know, harvesting them, bunching them, washing them, getting them ready for market. You know, he figures, you know, I can do this many bunches in an hour and I can sell them for this much and it's got to be at least $100 an hour. Now, you know, again, granted, he's got probably the highest end market in the country. You know, he's selling at a couple farmers markets in Westchester County, which, if you know that area, that's a very upscale suburb of New York City. And then the other beautiful thing is he sells to restaurants, high-end restaurants in New York, but another farmer takes it in. He's a couple hours out of New York, so he doesn't have to commute into New York, which is amazing. Okay. He's very immaculate and very particular, and so he marks the corners of all his beds with these wooden surveyor stakes, and he runs string and, you know, does his seeding and everything to the string, which a lot of other growers will tell you, and there's truth to it, that, you know, that's not making you money, getting your rows straight. But, you know, again, I think, you know, Mrs. White talks about our gardens and our farms being an object lesson of what the Lord wants to do in our hearts. So I think it's important for our farms to look neat and orderly and weed free. You know, we're not there yet, but we're working on it. Okay, this is just some of his beds. I think that, I'm not sure what that was, maybe turnips. But the next picture, I think, you know, he says people come there and they say, you're so lucky that you don't have rocks. Oh, no, it's going again. Hey, can you stop it? Is there another clicker? Okay, go back a little further. Almost. There we go. Maybe you're just going to have to do it back there. So next picture. So this is one of his beds. He said, we make our own luck around here. You know, you can imagine all that rock out of one bed. So the point is, the first few years, they really worked hard. But the beauty is now, he's working 5 days a week. He's taking 2 days off and quitting at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's unbelievable, you know, that they have gotten their systems down to the point that they are working 8-hour days, 5 days a week. Incredible. Okay, let's keep going. Yeah, we're going to have to hurry. So these are just more pictures of his farm. Keep going. This is some lettuce. That was an example of a hoop house that he just pulled out his summer crops and, you know, being movable, he moved it over the lettuce there. This was just kind of a neat way to trellis T-posts with just a PVC T on top and then your electrical conduit. I think the next picture, yeah, he had some peas growing there. They had a couple of these electric golf carts that they used. He said they used to have four-wheelers, but the apprentices would, they drove too fast. So these don't drive so fast. This is one of his big greenhouses, just immaculate. Okay, let's keep going. He had a couple of these greens machines. Now, this is a commercial spinner, but they're like $3,000 a piece. And people who've used them compared to a washing machine say a washing machine does a better job. And this was a root crop cleaner. You just bunch, you know, you have your carrots or whatever, and you run them through that, spins. So he's investing a lot of money. You know, he's making a lot of money, but he's investing a lot. Let's keep going. Oh, this is something I haven't seen anywhere else. You know, Johnny sells a big bed roller that's kind of awkward to carry around. But this is, he gets this off Amazon. It's for concrete work. Anybody who's worked with concrete. But it's something he can carry with one hand. He uses the four-row seater. So he carries that with one hand and this roller with the other. He rolls his beds before and after seating them with this. Okay, this I thought was neat because the dark area that's just been watered, that morning he harvested arugula off of that. And it's now replanted. I think it was in spinach. So his beds are never empty for more than a few hours. That's how intensive he is. Very organized with his tools. Okay, let's just keep going. This was his starter house. And can we go back one picture? Okay, notice that these tables roll back and forth. So you can make your aisle where you need to. But then you can push them together, so it's a much more efficient way to use your space. You just have one aisle that can move. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so it's very efficient. He's got the overhead hose for watering. And then I think the next picture also shows. Now, this is something we have, which we really love. A trolley in your greenhouse, your starter house, for moving trays around. You know, rather than carrying two by hand, you can put 12 on, and it saves a lot of time. You know, it's the little efficiencies that start making you really profitable. Okay, let's keep going. We're gonna run out of time. This was his delivery vehicle, and he had this ramp screwed on there. You know, it was an option. He had two Mercedes-Benz delivery vans like this. They're neat because it's a five-seater, and then it has the room in the back so it's kind of a combination. You know, most delivery vehicles are just like a two-seater. But anyway, a lot of these small farms had these Mercedes vans. Okay, and this is actually just a few pictures of Pleasant Valley Farm in Argyle, New York, the Arnolds. They're doing amazing things, but they're doing like 5 acres, so it was a little big for our liking. But I wanted to, this is a video. Can you play this? This is called a bubbler, and this is the way they're washing greens now. You just dump them in there, and it's gentle. Run it one more time. It gently stirs the greens around, and the dirt drops off. And basically, I'll show you a picture later on at JM's farm of how it's made, you know, with the PVC pipe. But it's just like a hot tub, you know, air blower, whatever. Okay, so this is, they had amazing brassicas. I mean, we can't do anything like that in Tennessee. You know, this is upstate New York. But we didn't spend a lot of time there just because it wasn't the model we were really looking for. You know, we like the acre and a half model. And this is Elliot Coleman's farm. And I'm sure most of you have heard of him. If you haven't, you need to. He's kind of the father or grandfather of the small farm movement. He does quite a bit with chickens. And these were some winter kale, a variety. If you want to know, I have it written down afterwards. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but he was able to harvest. Some kale keeps growing through the winter, the Brassica napus strain, whereas the Brassica oleraceae, which is like your standard curly kale, doesn't keep growing so well in the winter. Napus, N-A-P-U-S, the Russian kales. We've got somebody from Russia, red and white Russian, and this was some variation of that. This was a neat tool that he was generous enough to give us, one of his prototypes, but I think this is going to be in Johnny's. It's a new wire weeder, and we really like it, but it's got interchangeable heads, just a simple kind of bolt, you know, different size heads, so you can have one tool with multiple sized heads, and it works really well on nicely prepared soil. He's not just about making money, because this is, you know what this is? Artichokes. You can't make a lot of money on artichokes, but you know, he likes growing these different things. He had the best transplants, and this is a plug for Soil Blocks. Though a lot of you know we're old school, we still use Soil Blocks. They're not the most efficient way to do transplants, but I didn't see any other farm with transplants that look like this. And so, to me, it was just a reminder that Soil Blocks, I think, make the healthiest transplants. Because they all use the same mix. They're using Vermont compost, Fort V, I think it's called, mix, potting mix, leeks. Okay, let's keep going. This was some overwintered onions, carrots. His farm is just, you know, he's such an innovator. He's like a little kid. When you go there, he's wanting to show you all his latest things he's been fooling with. And he's got his discard pile outside his shop. I said, this is like Thomas Edison. So this is some intensive. Again, this is the end of September, 1st of October. This is Maine, so it kind of gives you an idea of where he's at there. His wife is doing a lot of flowers this year. Keep going. If you get Growing for Market magazine, the latest issue, she has an article. She had a whole hoop house full of dahlias. It was amazing. Incredible. So from there, we went up to Quebec. And Jonathan was showing this microgreens operation. A new harvester he had come up with for microgreens. So they were doing it on a fairly large scale. This is a video. It's not one of the best videos. But we were doing, 13 or 17 trays a minute, something like that. We had it. They were quite impressed. They are anxious to order one. This was just the prototype. Then from there, we went to JM's farm. Have you all heard of Jean-Martin Fortier? If you haven't, he's another one you need to know about. He's written a book called The Market Gardener. This is the closest thing that is out there, in my opinion, on a handbook for small-scale agriculture. He gets into lots of detail, and it's quite amazing. I should back up and say, Elliot Coleman keeps experimenting with his seasons, and he was doing year-round and making about $150,000 off an acre and a half, but you know, having like six employees, so he was only netting like $30,000. And he said, you know, that's too much work for that. And so now they're growing, or I should say they're marketing October through June and doing kind of the off season when stuff isn't growing so fast. They can basically do it with two people, and they're grossing around $100,000, but netting $60,000. So even though they're not making as much, because their labor costs are lower, they're able to come away with more. And so they were excited about that. Okay, so this, we're going to kind of go through this quick. JM, in the last couple of years, is working for a Canadian billionaire and running a farm, trying to scale up his model. His model, for those of you who haven't read the book, is an acre and a half, and he's grossing right around $150,000. But again, doing it very, you know, 5 days a week, very balanced, I would say. And so, you know, this book came out, The Market Gardener, and got a lot of people excited about market gardening, small farming. You know, wow, you know, we can, and he's grossing, I mean, he's netting almost half of that, around $70,000 for he and his wife, off an acre and a half. But this is scaling up, and so a lot of this guy, this billionaire, you know, money is not an issue, obviously, and so there's a lot of high-tech stuff that I wouldn't fool with. But this, we really like this setup for irrigation. It's wobblers. All the farms we went to are using Senninger wobblers. And you've got these stakes, and then they just plug in to your main line. You just use a drip punch a hole, and then there's a little sleeve that stays in there, and then it pops into that, so you can easily move it. And so I hope it's going to work for us this next year using that system. A lot cheaper than buying sprinkler stands and stuff. Here we are in one of his fields of, that was one, a mustard, carrots, lots of carrots. These hoop houses, well, they weren't hoop houses, they were greenhouses. I think, you know, like $50,000 a piece or something, just way overkill. But growing lots of lettuce, eggplant, 5 feet, 6 feet tall. It was quite amazing. Okay, let's keep going, Joshua. Now, we want to see that bubbler. This is his bubbler. Just simple PVC pipe with a bunch of holes drilled in it. And like I say, you hook it up to some kind of air pump. And that's the way everybody's going. You know, it eliminates the triple washing and handling it so much. You just dump it in there, let it bubble a while, skim it off, put it in your spinner, and you're good to go. Okay, he's done a lot with farmscaping. He's got 50 40 by 100 foot plots. So that's 5 acres of intensive growing. But between each plot was this areas with natural farmscaping. Oh, hey, this is looking good. And, yeah, just He's got tarps for each of his sections, so he doesn't have to move tarps around, silage tarps. Maybe some of you don't know about those. I won't talk about them right now, but it's a great way to manage weeds as well as some other things. Okay, let's keep going. He uses 18-inch pathways, so he can't use a standard quick hoop. So he combines two pieces of metal conduit and makes them a little wider. And then he also runs the string, as you can see there, to give some added stability. And is doing a lot with those. He does an amazing job with these. Are all heirloom tomatoes. Now, the last farm we visited, we went from Quebec over and down through Indiana and went to Ben Hartman's farm, Goshen, Indiana. The Lean Farm, that's another book. If you haven't heard of it, this is a great book for market gardeners. It's called The Lean Farm, and it's subtitled How to Minimize Waste, Increase Efficiency, and Maximize Value and Profits with Less Work. That ought to sell it to you right there. These books, we will have Ad Agra is selling in the back, so if you want to get any of these, we have them on site, all the books we recommend. Okay, I know we're right about out of time. Now, Ben is using a little different system, more traditional, but this was a neat twist. He's got these little PVC things with fish netting in it, and he puts one on the bottom and then dumps his greens in, and then puts another one on top, so then he can just lift them out, put them in the next sink, you know, do a few rinses like that, and then he dumps them. Next slide. Appreciate, Joshua, you do. He dumps them. He's kind of made this little setup. He's got these big bins underneath with bunches of holes drilled in it. So he can just dump it in there and then take that bin and put it in his washing machine and spin it. And then he's showing us here, he actually uses a heat sealer. You know, they weigh the greens and seal the packet with a heat sealer. And he feels like that's faster than twisty ties or whatever. And this is some of his lean systems that you know, pictures of what a place is supposed to look like. So an apprentice knows without having to go through, you need to do this and this and this. This is what it's supposed to look like at the end of the day. Very efficient, again. You know, this is another simple example. This is for root washing. They decided, hey, let's not have legs, because legs on a table, you gotta clean around, you know. So they just suspended it, and it's so much easier to clean up afterwards. Okay, we're out of time. You know, again, everything organized. He's big into paper pot transplanting. In fact, he's transplanting salad mix with his paper pot transplanter. He's basically gone totally to using the paper pot. And he's got two young boys. He's working 30 hours a week on the farm. He's got one helper that comes in a couple afternoons a week, I think. He's making about between 90 and 100,000, 30 hours a week on it's less than an acre, between a half acre and an acre. And, you know, netting over 50% because his overhead is low. These are some of his beds. The other unique thing with Ben is he uses a tractor, a little Kubota tractor with the wheels on a 30-inch spacing. So he's got his same 30-inch beds, 12-inch pathways, but he's mechanized it, which is really, I think, going to be a wave of the future. Some kale that had been growing all summer to tomatoes. Here's his undercutter bar. He said this is the best tool on his farm. He runs that down a bed to loosen his carrots or beets, radishes, any kind of root crop, garlic. And, you know, it just loosens the soil, runs under it, and makes it really simple to harvest. Okay, I think that's about it. Is that it, Joshua? Okay. Well, we did pretty good. So, again, this was a quick overview, but just showing you some of the innovations that are going on in small farming. Just to kind of recap, these are all, you know, acre and a half or less. They're all, you know, making at least $100,000 per acre. They're focusing on salad greens is a big thing. Salanova lettuce, if you don't know about Salanova lettuce, they're all using it for lettuce mix rather than seeding baby mix. We've done it this winter and it's amazing. We've gotten so many positive comments on Salanova. You can recut it multiple times. Salanova. It's only available from Johnny's. It's a little bit expensive. There's a little bit of controversy over it because it's a plant protected variety, which a lot of purists are having a hard time with. But I don't think technically you're supposed to save the seed. You know, if you're doing it for home use, you could probably get away with it. But there's some exciting. High Mowing has some new lettuces coming out this year. They're calling it One Cut, but I talked to them at High Mowing and they said it works the same. Basically, Salanova gives you a head of baby leaves rather than just, you know, usually lettuce, the leaves get big, but it's all baby leaves. So you can cut it and you've got all this really high quality salad mix. It's quite amazing.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.